And welcome to Ask Udi, the podcast where listeners get their questions on SOA and web services answered. This is your host, Udi Dahan, bringing you the cold hard facts you need to make decisions about SOA. I am the software simplest, helping you keep it simple. This podcast is brought to you exclusively by Dr. Dobbs Journal, leading the computer press in covering practical technology, languages, platforms, and tools, online at www.ddj.com. Also, don't forget to visit my blog, www.udidahan.com. That's UDIDAHAN.com, for more information. Our question this week comes from Henry, who asks, Udi, I've been following this SOA stuff for a while now, but haven't gotten aboard. Recently, I read a white paper on using intelligent parallel processing in service-oriented architecture on bringing SOA to the telcos, so it looks like SOA is going to invade my world too. What I didn't quite understand from the white paper is what a software pipeline really is and what it has to do with SOA. Well, Henry, if you're working in one of the big telcos, then I suppose parallel processing is nothing new to you. I mean, that's the way that the systems have been built and are being built, so I'm pretty sure that that's something that you're well aware of. In the paper, when they define exactly what a pipeline is, rather a software pipeline, they use the generic definition. I'll just quote it here. A pipeline is a logical execution facility for invoking the discrete tasks of a business process in an order-controlled manner. Ordering is controlled based on priority, order of message input, such as FIFO, or both. So that's a pipeline, which is pretty generic, and it's quite understandable why that doesn't really tell us very much about how to design our systems. There's one thing that I wanted to add before we actually get into the details, because it's a question that's been popping up in various industries that have to deal with very high workloads, is how to create high-performance services. And usually behind that question are two non-functional requirements for the service in question. The first one is latency in the handling of a specific event or message. For instance, the requirement might be something to the tune of the processing of a single event or message will take no longer than 2 seconds. And the other non-functional requirement is a throughput requirement, which could be something to the tune of the system will be able to handle 300 events a minute, or the system will be able to handle 1 million events a day, or something to that effect. So these two non-functional requirements together, they quite often do come together when we're talking about high-performance services, are what drive us to use pipelines. Before we talk about pipelines in the small, I want to discuss what a pipeline-style architecture is. Pipeline architecture is based around the idea that the processing of a certain event or message has a set number of steps, and that each of these steps is independent of the previous one. What I mean by independent of the previous one is that if we have two steps that are independent of each other, then we can run each step on a separate machine, and we can have event from time zero being processed on stage two, while event from time one is being processed on machine one. So the idea is that we are able to handle multiple events at various stages in the pipeline. So again, if we're going back to the pipeline architecture, a pipeline architecture is comprised of multiple independent steps where each step in the pipeline can be and often is run on a separate machine or on numerous machines. And in this entire pipeline, we can have multiple events at various stages of execution or processing. Okay. Now, why is this such a big deal? I mean, how is it that we say a pipeline architecture will enable you to solve these two functional requirements? I'm sorry, that's non-functional requirements. The first point is how do you know that you're not answering them? When we're discussing a pipeline, we can quite easily time the execution of each stage, and by summing up the execution times for each stage in all the stages of the pipeline, then we'll know what the latency was in handling that specific event. On the flip side of it, we can discover the latency, the throughput of the pipeline, in other words, how many events it can finish per unit of time, by looking at the weakest link in the chain. So the weakest link in the pipeline is, in essence, the stage that takes the longest time to complete. So if within our pipeline we have three stages, and stage 1 takes 1 second, and stage 2 takes 2 seconds, and stage 3 takes 3 seconds, the throughput of our pipeline will be one unit of work every 3 seconds. It doesn't really matter that our first two stages can work faster than that. If we have a higher input rate than that, the pipeline will choke up. It will overflow. We will not be able to handle it. So, first of all, that gives us our throughput capability. That, right off the bat, can tell you, you know, are you on base or not? Right from the get-go, without actually having to deploy an entire system on very expensive hardware to find out we're not even close to our throughput constraints requirements. What you have to remember is that almost any stage can be split up into two or more substages, and in which case they can be distributed on multiple machines. In essence, taking that 3 seconds and bringing it down to three stages of 1 second. That's, in pure math terms, the real world teaches us that things usually don't work that way. When we have to split something up, we usually pay a penalty for it. So if we have a stage that is currently taking 3 seconds, and we want to divide it up into three parts, what has often occurred is that each of the substages will not take 1 second, it may take a second and a half. And this penalty we pay is, by and large, the data transfer penalty, because we are now shuttling more data between more machines. And that can easily get up to a 50% penalty. So while we are paying a penalty in overall latency, for instance, that stage will no longer take 3 seconds altogether, when split up between three separate substages, it will take 4.5 seconds. Since each of those stages now can complete its work in 1.5 seconds, we have lengthened our pipeline into 5 stages, with stage 1 taking 1 second, stage 2 taking 2 seconds, and the 3 last stages taking 1.5 seconds. So we have improved the latency of the system. We have not improved the latency of the system. We have made it worse. We have taken our 6-second pipeline and turned it into a 7.5-second pipeline. So the latency of a single event has increased, while our throughput has also increased. So while both of them have increased, one of them is worse, another one is better. Our throughput is now one unit of work, one event being processed every 2 seconds. So now the weakest link of the chain is no longer one of the last stages, it is stage number 2. So that is a pipeline theory or pipeline architecture, you know, in a nutshell. And this is really how we go about answering these non-functional requirements. How does this have to do with service-oriented architectures? Actually, not very much when you look at service-oriented architectures in the external sense, as in the communication between services. We will very rarely see a pipeline of services. We're talking about very high cohesion within the pipeline. While each stage may be independent in that it can run on a separate machine, the sequence of steps is known ahead of time. It is planned. The timing is something that we will want to control very tightly. This is not something that you'll expect to get an SLA for. This is something that you'll be handling internal to a service. So in that respect, don't really expect to see these software pipelines or pipeline architectures manifesting themselves at the service level. You won't have a software pipeline service or the stage number 1 service. That's really not the direction to go in. When you have the service, or when you are the one that has to develop the service that has to answer an SLA that includes remarks like must be able to finish the processing of a single event in 2 seconds, must be able to handle 1 million events a day, then you will be best served by employing a pipeline architecture within your service. So what are these stages really made of? It's really quite simple. At the most basic level, we're talking about some kind of queue that will buffer the load entering in a specific stage, and some sort of worker that's feeding off of that queue and doing its work. For those of you that have studied networking theory in a university or college, this is exactly what it is. You have a queue of requests, you have a single server feeding off of that, performing those requests, and then you can perform all sorts of wonderful mathematical analysis, like given a Gaussian load, and I don't even remember what the mathematical model for servers is, then you can find out what will be the average length of the queue, and when you have multiple queues feeding one into the other, then you can find out what is going to be your overall system load. And there are mathematical equations for solving this, which is really a great tool when you think about it. If you're going to sign off on an SLA, it's really great to know that there's some proven mathematical theory that you can rest upon. And saying, okay, I know that my system will be able to handle easily 2 million messages a day, given, again, a Gaussian load. By and large, when you're talking about large systems and large loads over large periods of time, you'll find that the load does often have a Gaussian distribution. Okay, that's enough theory. Back to the practice. Our pipeline architecture will be comprised of multiple stages. Like we said, each stage has some kind of queue where the previous stage puts the work in, and the worker just feeds off of the queue and takes information out, processes it, and puts the resulting data in the queue of the next stage, or there may be multiple next stages. I mean, we may have a pipeline that splits up into three parts and connects together, and then splits up into 10 parts and connects once again together. This is not really much of a pure distribution thing. What we're doing is we're finding that in the nature of the data itself, we can divide up the work in a certain way. For instance, in the processing of an order, we could possibly, this depends on your business logic, divide up the work based on order lines. If each order line is not dependent on the previous order line, then we could take our entire order and cut it along the fracture lines of each one of those order lines and split each one of those up and send it to a different instance of a stage, and have each of those order lines being processed in parallel on multiple machines in our software pipeline. So, again, internal to the service allows you to really tune your load, be able to answer an SLA with a very high degree of certainty. This is not something that you'll see between services. So that's really what software pipelines are. I'm not really sure that I'd see the connection to SOA. This is something internal to a service. It will definitely impact your ability to answer an SLA. And again, from what I've seen in the telcos, you guys are doing this anyways. SOA is not going to change that, despite vendors trying to rebrand their products that they've already branded them for SOA and to start marketing them to the telecom vertical industry. So, Henry, I hope that answers your question. It's been a bit long-winded answer, I'm afraid. If you would like some more information, fire me off an email, and I'll put up a blog post describing all this stuff again. That wraps it up for this week. Keep the questions coming. I'm really trying to get them down, but there are quite a lot. So if you haven't had your question answered, please bear with me. The email for sending questions is podcast@udidahan.com. That's UDIDAHAN.com. If you have a question that you'd prefer to see answered, not in the podcast, but on the blog, let me know. I'll be happy to oblige you there. And that's it for now. Until next week, then. Keep it simple. Bye-bye.